Sunday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Tonight's hosts are me, Mike, and...
Aaron, Anna,
Scott.
I attend school in Laytonville, and the others attend, or attended, Willits High. Youth Speaks Out would like to thank Laytonville's Healthy Start and the Mendocino Department of Social Services for providing funding until June 2003. Special thanks to Michelle Schott, Nikki Walden, and Michelle Franklin of the Laytonville Healthy Start program for making this grant possible.
We would like to dedicate the show to a former Willits High School student, Kenny Grimes, who passed away on Friday following a fatal car accident. His memory will be eternally celebrated.
Tonight our topic is revisioning high school. We'll begin tonight's program with an interview Scott conducted with Gordon Osland, principal of Willits High School. Scott wanted to know what a high school looks like from a principal's point of view. After the interview, we'll discuss our perspectives of high school, then later invite you to join in the discussion. The number here at the Willits studio will be 456-9991. We'll begin with the interview.
My name's Scott Lassie, and I'm here today with Mr. Osland, the principal of Willits High School, and we'll start with the first question. What's it like being the principal at Willits High School?
Being a principal of Willits High School is it's the best job I could have. It's an exciting job. Every day you're dealing with something brand new. Probably much of your day is consumed by situations that you can neither predict nor can you script or control. And you're dealing with people that have a tremendous amount of potential and great things are happening every day in their lives, or tremendously difficult things are happening. And so what I do every day is go to a place where more than 700 people converge and try to figure out how we can sort of move those folks forward, particularly our students, and move them forward and help people find dreams. And that's my job, is I assist people in trying to make dreams come true. And that runs everywhere from helping people discover what those dreams might be, all the way through to watching people getting into the careers or the colleges that they worked for through all those years.
How much influence does a principal have on students' success in high school?
I think that the principal's influence, I think it's a huge amount of influence on a student's success. It's different than the huge amount that teachers have. I have a different set of challenges than teachers in trying to help students be successful. I think there are policy issues that I get to deal with. There's curriculum issues. Cultural issues are a huge part of being a principal. That is shaping a vision and a culture of a school. And the more students that you have and the more teachers you have, I think the harder that is, and that's a really tough job because not everybody agrees with that vision or the culture should be. I don't think that students can really be successful at school or in life unless the culture is conducive of that. And so that would be probably the primary thing. And your policies and the things that you're doing day to day as a principal, they're going to have to line up with that vision. They're going to have to line up with the culture you're trying to create. And all of that said, that's really important work, but then I look at what teachers do, and teachers have to carry that out on a day-to-day basis, forced to deal with the same relationships each day, and that takes a huge amount of work on their part, and I think that so hopefully we're working in sync, and that's part of my job too, is to try to get in sync with what teachers are trying to do in their classrooms, and then trying to kind of move that toward whatever vision that I, as an administrator, or we as a school community feel is important.
What are some ways that you think can make school more enjoyable and successful for students today?
I think that schools need to take a strong look at the culture that students come from today. The culture that we've generated and manufactured within the United States is very different than the culture that schools are charged with creating each day. So for 6 or 7 hours, we have students at schools involved in a culture that I don't think is really supported by the culture that's being created in this country. And I don't think everything that's being created within our country is a positive, but at the same time, I don't think everything we're doing at the school is a positive. And so what happens is we're in a cultural clash between, ironically, the schools, the foundation in the United States, along with the family, and we're kind of clashing with what mass marketing, mass media, and mass production in this country are doing. And I think that, you know, this is big pie in the sky stuff, but I think that that's probably the first step, is to come to a reconciliation about what our culture is really all about and where schools fit within that. I think that that probably may not occur in my career. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. The things that we can affect, I think, are beginning to take a better look at who students are, what they want, and what we need to do as an educational institution to help those dreams come true. And there it gets back to the original thing we were talking about. I've met with kids in my office that will sit there 14 or 15 years old. They're frustrated in English class. They're frustrated in history class. And when they talk about what they want to do, they want to be heavy equipment operators. And the sad part about our society is that we would say to the heavy equipment operators of the world, well, you're important, we guess, but we actually don't take people that want to be like you and help them be like you when they're 14 or 15 years old. A heavy equipment operator obviously is an important part of our society if you look around. And if a kid knows that that's really what excites them at 14 or 15, then we should be excited for the kid and we should be working in that direction. But that means redefining what happens in that kid's life at 14 or 15. And can they go off to heavy equipment operating school right then and there? Because certainly every little school couldn't provide that. But we tend to sort of try to steer everybody. And the scary part that's occurring right now, I think, is that vocational education is taking an extreme back seat. And that relates heavily with student success, because a student will be most successful when they believe that a school believes in their dream. And so why would you want to be successful for me if I didn't have faith in you and I didn't have faith in your dreams? And once we clear that hurdle, the next hurdle is, what have you done for me lately? And that's what most kids are probably asking is, okay, so they believe in my dream. What have they done to help me get to that dream? And I think that's the path of making students more successful. What I fear is that we're moving away from that path with emphasis on testing, with federal and state budget decisions that are being made, and not all kids are being brought along. Instead, what we're doing is we're defining education as what successful college graduates in this country would define education to be. And I don't think that honors labor. It doesn't honor craftsmanship. It doesn't honor a whole lot of people that, you know, that I sort of envy and respect when I look around.
What are some of the strengths and weaknesses of students today?
These are the best students that I've seen. The achievements, the energy, the dedication, all of that, those are the greatest strengths. I think that there are a lot of programs in place. I think Willits High School Peer Counseling Program, for instance, has an ability to teach communication skills that we never even thought about when we were in school, and the kids respond to that. I think that I'm always blown away with so many students and their ability to take technology and turn it into beauty and turn it into art. That's something that even people my age can't really grasp. And you guys grew up with it. All the things that you grew up with, they're just second nature to you, and that's another strength that you guys have. I think that the weaknesses are probably, I think there's a whole lot of people that are misleading kids today and teaching them that back when I was in school, and it's the same song that I think they've played for a long time, which was, when I was young, we worked harder, we had it tougher, we had this, we had that. And I think that that message that you're receiving, I think many young people believe that, and they believe that somehow this generation isn't as capable or as able as the last generation. They're not as altruistic as the last generation. And when you begin to believe that, I think that that's where other sort of micro weaknesses begin to appear. And I think that that's where weaknesses surrounding substances, drugs, alcohol, abusive relationships, things like that, I think that those creep in. And I think that we as society, we as adults, we need to do a far better job at not giving people negative messages. I think a lot of times adults look down at kids and think, well, how come they're not more tolerant? And what I see each and every day is a hugely tolerant, diverse, loving population. It's a privilege to me to work with 650 kids that I think are that together. you know, and when I look at it and I think, wow, 50 years ago, we didn't talk about diversity in schools because diversity was essentially banned in schools in many parts of the country. And 100 years ago, diversity was banned to the degree that people were, you know, terrorizing other people. And 200 years ago, they were enslaving other people. That's historical evidence that huge progress has been made. And people that, you know, if they want to talk about that, what they need to do is stop by Willits High School or hopefully any high school, come into the school, let's walk around and meet kids, and you'll see their strengths because they're all around us at Willits High School.
Where would you like to see high schools in the next 5 years?
High schools in the next 5 years, again, getting back to the finite things, I think we need to have a stronger vocational education program. I'd like to see high schools that had stronger apprenticeship programs, had more flexible schedules as far as when classes are held and the kinds of classes that kids are engaging in. I think that they're, for a long time, many of us have felt that there needs to be more hands-on experiences. There needs to be education that engages kids on a physical as well as a mental level. We have a few things that are occurring that are exceptional. I think peer counseling is exceptional. The new AVID program, I think, has the hope of being incredibly exceptional. The kind of counseling services we're delivering to students, this generation of students, responds real well to one-on-one counseling. And I think that schools can economically provide that, and they have to provide it. And I'm proud of Willits High School because we have, you know, counseling services that are much greater than you'll find in many schools. And the one-on-one kind of counseling, I've seen that to be highly effective. And right now, the kinds of programs, the top five, we have athletics, in no certain order. We have athletics, we have FFA, we have peer counseling, we have Las Razas Unidas, and we have student leadership or government. And those are the big five non-classroom activities that we need to examine and say, what are the best things that are occurring there, and how do we incorporate those into the day-to-day, you know, education of a kid? Because if those are working so well, we should be doing more of those rather than pretending that those are just add-ons or extracurriculars.
What encouragement would you give students today?
I think the biggest encouragement is that you really are a smarter generation. You really are, I think, a more caring, a more tolerant generation of kids that would more easily accept the ideas or the visions of another and willing to celebrate with another. There's a lot of opportunity out there for kids to be involved in sort of hopefully a better vision of the future. You know, there's been a lot of discussion recently about, you know, peace and war, and is war an option and whatnot. And I think that, you know, it's, again, I get back to evolution, and I think there's ample evidence that, you know, the evolution of people is to be less violent. And I think that's why I like peer counseling and the program of communication so much, is because that's the encouragement that I would want to give to kids, is learn how to communicate better, because what you're going to find in the world is that will create a better world. And absolutely expect the best of people and expect that people are going to be loving and nonviolent. And I think that, you know, then you progress. I don't know if this is giving encouraging or encouraging people, but I would hope that people would be encouraged to get involved in professions that do make the world more peaceful, that they make the world more beautiful. And that doesn't mean you have to be an environmentalist. I would encourage everybody to aesthetically appreciate things more than I think our forefathers have.
There have been some controversies about race relations in Willits and at Willits High School. Can you maybe comment on that?
Yeah, we spend a lot of time in schools this year, every year, thinking about race relations and really relations between kids. We're in probably the best position that we've been in the 5 years that I've been there. We're at a stage where our sort of internally what I'm pushing is, earlier I had mentioned the big five groups, student groups, you know, athletics, ASB, Las Razas Unidas, peer counseling, and FFA. And what I'm trying to do is encourage you know, key members who may have interests in other areas to cross over that bridge. And traditionally, for instance, in FFA, you wouldn't have a lot of Hispanic students, and likewise, you wouldn't have a much of an FFA, that's Future Farmers of America. You wouldn't have a lot of FFA folks engaged in activities of Las Razas Unidas or peer counseling. But if you investigate a little bit deeper, and this is how I think that, you know, and it's not a quota system at Willits High School, or what it really is finding out that students have common interests. We have about 15% of our student population is Hispanic at Willits High School. About 75% are, you know, white students, and the other, I think that leaves us with about 10% of varying other races. But the Hispanic population is unique in that most of them are bilingual. Peer Counselors is a program that's there to help students on their journey through high school. To date, there have been, you know, one or two Hispanic members of Peer Counselor, and my ambition and my hope is there would be many more, and we're actively recruiting them. And the people that are out there, they know who we're recruiting, and hopefully they're listening to this radio program. And, you know, I want them engaged because I need emissaries and ambassadors through the high school experience, because they have stories just as you're a peer counselor, and you know the stories that you've shared and the way it's helped you. They're going to go out there and help students that, especially because of an institution in which it's a primarily an English-speaking institution, it makes it even that much more critical to have that bridge and to have those emissaries so that we can work with each other. And I think that's been the role of Hispanic peer counselors this year, is trying to figure out, okay, you know, what's the insight when kids are having problems, and what's the insight culturally. The discussion this year about race has also led us to do work in all those areas, but also in smaller areas, simple things. This is the first year that Willits High School, the parent newsletter, we started doing in Spanish, and we started doing that in English and Spanish because the information that's provided in there has a lot to do with making dreams come true, counseling and scholarships and achievements on all of those things, and getting involved in different organizations. For years and years, we've always done it in English, and 15% of the parents, or not 15%, but say 10% of the parents out there, they would be more comfortable understanding that in Spanish. And this year, if you look at the folks that are graduating, that are applying for scholarship, the number of Hispanic students staying at Willits High School rather than leaving, all of those numbers are up. I think we're doing tremendous work, and it's a lot of fun because it is energizing. And I think that if we, as administration and counseling and teaching members of the school community, if that's our attitude and that's our philosophy, I can almost guarantee you when that philosophy hits the street among the students, they will mirror that, and you will have a better loving community. That's how I view race relations right now at Willits High School. We, you know, like any culture where you have more than 700 people, we're going to have trips, we're going to have misses, we're going to have mistakes, we're going to have moments of insensitivity somewhere on the campus at some point. And that's the last thing I think people need to remember about race relations in this country. Our society sends mixed messages about race to its young people. And then sometimes we're unforgiving about a kid who's learning about differences. And what we as adults are charged to do is we are charged to educate. So if someone utters a homophobic phrase, if they utter a racist phrase, our job isn't to admonish and think we've corrected that problem. Our job is to help the kid explore why it is that they might have done that and figure out how you move on. Almost every kid that I've ever worked with has been able to make that leap from being unsure about why they're doing something and slipping up and doing something that's insensitive, and then through discussion and education has been able to make the leap and become a better person. That's our job. And if you don't want to have that job, then I suppose you shouldn't work in a school. And, you know, that's the important role that we play.
I'm Scott Lassie, and I've been speaking with Gordon Oslin, principal of Willits High School. And thank you very much for taking the time to do this interview with me.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to Youth Speaks Out on KZYXNZ. I'm Mike, and
I'm Aaron.
Anna.
Scott.
Thanks for the interview, Scott and Gordon. We'll begin this portion of the program by discussing the interview and our high school experiences, what has been successful, where limitations are, and what we think could make high school better. Who would like to begin?
Well, I just graduated from Willits High School, 2002. And one of the things I still remember that I feel like I'll take with me all my life is my peer counseling experience. And I did it for 3 years. And it's just what you learn in that program, the communication aspect of it, which I think anybody and everybody should take. I think teachers should take it. I think it would help high school out. Just be able to sit down and communicate with someone and have the skills to assess what's going on and see what's happening in people's lives, I think is something that can change your whole life. And as well as like focusing when you get to college and talking with your professors about what's going on and just becoming a better person all around.
Yeah, I'm a senior at Willits High School, and I'm also in peer counseling along with Anna. And that's what I've learned so much, is that communication is so important. And if I can communicate with my teachers and talk to them about what's going on and other people around me, then I have really found that I become a better person that way. So I'm going to take that with me forever.
As a sophomore, I feel like a lot of the same things as Scott and Aaron said. Communication has really been a big part of peer counseling and developing over my high school experience. And I found that by being involved in other extracurriculars, it's provided a motivation to like succeed throughout my schooling and continue on what I want to create. So
I'm the odd man out here. I mean, I haven't been involved in peer counseling or you know, mentoring little kids or anything, the big brother stuff. I don't know. Should they make that mandatory? Like, it seems like they should have some sort of, not mandatory, like, mentoring of little kids, because there's a lot of people who couldn't handle that. But, you know, some sort of communication workshop.
Not mandatory, like, necessarily peer counseling, but I definitely say mandatory communication skills. There are so many times in a classroom where if people, whether it's the teacher, whether it's the student, whether it's the principal, whoever it is, if they would have been taught a way to sit down, focus on what's going on, try to put aside like emotional issues and just discuss what's happening in kind of a structured way, I think it would be amazing how much things would change and how much would actually happen, instead of just like the constant, like someone talks behind your back or something, and then someone else talks about something that maybe should happen, but nobody sits down and just says, okay, let's change something, let's do something. And communication skills, I think, are really important anywhere in life.
And yeah, I mean, I think the opportunities are out there. Like with peer counseling, it's open to anybody, and except for freshmen. And once they become a sophomore,
dirty freshman,
then they can try out and everything like that. But there's other things like Camp Anytown that students at high schools can go to, and that's where they can learn about skills and learn about diversity and things like that. So mandatory, I don't know, but I think it should definitely be an option for people.
And Camp Anytown has a lot to offer for anybody who doesn't really know about it. And like Scott was saying, it's a diversity training time. And they try to get people from all different social groups in high school and get them together and teach them ways to explore other social groups and come to terms with their differences and think of ways to better the school in general. And administrators go to it too. And I think it's a really great experience. There's one activity that they do is you have to be separated into groups, and you can only talk with someone who's in your group. And then there's other people who are totally isolated and you can't talk to them at all. And just teaching you about oppression and things that happen throughout life, like things that we learn in school, to actually be a part of it in a sense and experience it is so amazing. And it's a really great experience if anybody actually has the opportunity to do it.
Does anybody know what the does anybody know what the funding's like for these programs? Where does it come from? Because I know they can only afford to send so many kids. Like, about 4 people from our high school got to go last year, and I don't know about this year.
I don't know how many went from ours. Like, I was going to say like 30 maybe, but I'm not sure how many actually got to go last year and how many get to go this year. And there's not as much funding that I know of this time. Like, I got asked to be a counselor because they're in a different area this time, and so they needed more counselors, and it just seemed like it wasn't as put together, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure where the funding comes from, but these sort of programs are going to be at risk of being cut out because of the budget crisis. And so these are things that I think are most important to students today in high school.
Yeah, with the, there was class size reduction that happened a while ago, and it kind of was a way to hopefully better students in class experiences having a smaller class size. Like, one of my most productive classes was calculus, which was only 9 people. And then one of my more not so productive classes was ones where there were like 30 people or 35, and the teacher can only focus on you for so much time before they have to go to someone else, and there's distractions, there's people talking who don't want to be there. And I think that kind of happens once you go to college too. Like, you see that as the upper levels, as you go up in levels, that people who are going to be doing this later are there because they want to do it and they have to do it. And so the class gets smaller, and I think it's really helpful. But with this budget problem we're having, that means less teachers, which means less teachers for less classes, which means there's not going to be, you know, like some schools, the music program's gone and things like that. So, but speaking of like classes though, what are some classes that you think should stay in the high school or should be there that maybe we're not having right now?
We have like a skills careers class, and we've had it since, you know, middle school. Like, they had me in a skills careers kind of class in 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, freshman year. But, you know, every time they tried to do it, it failed miserably. And I don't know what it was about the class. It was just something like no real world application, even though that was the goal of the class. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Well, also, like, just, I mean, there's a set up curriculum. There's a set up, I mean, we have such a structured school day. And if you could have your choice, like, what were some classes that maybe you would have instead of another history class or instead of another math class or something? What's something else you'd rather be doing?
I know for myself personally and a lot of other people, like, the art department has been a great help just to help them, like, cut loose from the strictly academic side of school and even, like, help them pursue what they want to do in the future rather than, like, the so-called structured system and everything that's going on. So it's a kind of like an outlet for a lot of students, and it's really important to have a strong art department, whereas like the budget cut is affecting that. So
yeah, and things like drama too. I mean, just like you said, like staying away from so much like math and English and history and sciences and everything like that, having an art class, having a drama class, that really is like a break for me from like just the so structured world that we're in. And so it's a real release for me.
Definitely, you know, the humanities, things, art, English, all that kind of stuff. As an American, you know, I really feel like I have no culture. It's like that, you know, everybody else has something to live up to or some background to kind of feed off of, but, you know, white male American, you know, what do I have?
Yeah, at Camp Anytown we did culture stuff, and it was like celebrating your heritage kind of and your culture, and it was like, okay, Americans. You know, like, it seemed like everybody else had like a traditional costuming and like a traditional food and things like that, and we're like, yep, we have like something from every other culture, and that's that. We're
a melting pot. Hamburgers and you know, imaginary freedom or something.
So how much of the time you spend at school seems like a waste?
Well, going to college now, and I go to Mendo, and seeing just how much is to offer and how much I'm actually taking from high school, I mean, I really feel like high school has prepared me pretty well for what I'm doing in Mendo. Like, a lot of my AP classes, like the English class, like sitting you down and having you write essays all the time, it seemed like such a pain in the butt. For so long, I had to write essays, and like, but to be able to write an essay now and to be able to like argue a point is like so amazing to be able to do. And I don't know, I think it's really important to have those base classes. And so I don't think high school is as much as a waste of time, but there's always those people who say, what am I going to use this for later in life? Or like Mr. Oslin was saying, you know, if they're going to be a heavy equipment operator, why do I need calculus?
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of school that's a waste of time for heavy equipment operators,
but it's still, and at the same time, like we were discussing before a little bit, like having a background and being able to talk to people from different, okay, so you're not going to sit around and talk to a heavy equipment operator all day, you know, just because you're one doesn't mean like that's the only person in your life who you're ever going to talk to. And so you want to be able to talk to them about different things, like maybe that book you read in high school that you thought was dumb. And, oh yeah, I read that book too. I thought it was dumb too. And you have something to relate about. And if you just sat down and centered yourself around this one thing.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people sit in math class and say, like, oh, this stuff I'm never going to use, it's pointless, this is stupid, I don't want to do it. But I just heard the other day from a friend that it really develops logical skills and things like that and problem solving. And so some things like that, it's really important to have.
I know for my high school years, I've kept that in mind. Like, I've shied away from the whole attitude, oh, school sucks, you know, what am I going to use this for? And it's actually taken a lot of effort just because I've seen a lot of people go downhill, and I've been through a lot of stressful phases, I guess, through high school, and I guess it could be an easy route to take, but personally, I've developed a drive to get through it, and, like, along the way, I've just been wanting to excel, and so that's my driving force, I guess.
So contagious apathy, and there's a lot of things that will sidetrack you in high school, really. That comes back to class size and distractions and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
And also people, there's a lot of people who feel like hands-on experience is like a great way to go too. You know, like, okay, show me how I can use this later on in life. Like all those people who sit down in math class and think it's totally pointless to be there. Like one of my teachers took us outside and was like, okay, you see this pole right here? If it was going to fall on you, you can find out right now if it's going to land on you. And it was like, okay, you know, if I was a lumberjack or something, you know, maybe I'd want to know if this tree was going to land on my head and kill me. Or, you know, maybe I'd want to know if I was in danger, my house was in danger of having that tree land on me in the next big storm. Like, you can figure it out by using your trigonometry and, like, finding out the angles and things like that. And so to, like, give you a simple application and be like, okay, go do it and show me what you've learned. And now I'm telling you, see, look, you can use this later on in life. I think it's really valuable and more teachers should do it.
Right, you know, the stereotypical view of, you know, modern academia is like sitting in a classroom just kind of, you know, huddled over books and with a pencil and paper, but, you know, we need some kind of real world application that's not like, okay, Algebra 2, real world application for some of the things we're learning. If you want to calculate a space shuttle launch, I'm not going to calculate any space shuttle launches.
So, speaking of realistically applicating your huddling over your books, how do you think state testing is helpful or not helpful to educational systems?
I think state testing is a joke. I personally know that so many people don't try on those tests, and that poorly reflects teachers teaching curriculum right and the students. It doesn't show how well they know a certain subject or anything like that. It's just false information in my mind.
It affects our funding.
Right. And that's probably why we're getting, you know, budget cuts and things like that.
So. I think they're catching on to me, though. They're making it harder to make cool designs with the dots, smaller rows and stuff.
Or not only that, but, like, then SATs and, like, you have to know how to take that test. It's not if you really know what's on the test. It's if you know how to take the test. Like, what's the deal with that? It drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's not, I don't know, it's kind of weird. It's like teachers will teach to the test, and if you don't know the answer, mark C.
Yeah,
and I've also heard that colleges are, they don't consider SATs as big of a deal as before, and so that's, I'm liking that better.
Some colleges don't even look at SATs anymore.
And then some colleges totally base admission on that, so it goes both ways.
Well, when you're in high school, I mean, I've had the experience now of having, like, some professors and trying to compare, like, people who have to have, like, a really high degree to be teaching college or something compared to teachers who are in high school and stuff like that. How do you feel like your teachers affect your learning and affect how you're doing in school and on these state tests?
Man, teachers make all the difference, the kind of teacher. It's like we have two math teachers at our high school, and there's just a world of difference between the two. One person will take math from math teacher A and fail. And then you can take it from math teacher B and pass easily with a C or a B.
Yeah, I think teacher's enthusiasm is really important. I just took a trip down to UC Santa Cruz, and I went into a class where I didn't care about it in the slightest. And by the end of class, I was so interested. And that was because the teacher was enthusiastic. They really wanted to teach it, and they're passionate about it. And so I think that makes all the difference.
Throughout my teachers from, like, elementary on to high school, I've kind of, like, basically figured out that a lot of the younger teachers I've had are, like, contain a lot more energy and seem to be a bit more interested in the subject and put out a little more energy. But I was thinking maybe it has to do sometimes with the age difference, because I've had some really young teachers, and they've been able to relate to their students on, like, such a close level that is so helpful. But that's not to say that some older teachers don't have that driving force. It's just really hard to find. And, I mean, at Willits High School, I think we're actually pretty blessed to have, like, the faculty that we do, because the ones, like, the worthwhile teachers we have are really outstanding. So I think that's really, really, really helpful.
There's an identification factor that teachers have, you know, the ability to kind of juxtapose yourself with the student and realize what he's going through. As teachers get burnt out, they get old, and, you know, they get pissed off, and they don't want to deal with the same kids all day long.
And also, like, one way that I feel like our high school was doing that before, and maybe if we start doing it again or did it, I don't know, on a higher level, is, like, the homeroom that we used to do. And before, there's always, I think, going to be people in life who just really don't want to do what they're doing, or they really don't care what they're doing. They don't care about you necessarily. They just want to deal with their own things. But homeroom was, it seemed like it was a chance where the students could get down. It was, like, a small group of students with, like, one teacher, and they can talk to you about what's going on in your life, and maybe they notice that you're not doing as well, and they ask you, okay, is something going on at home, or, you know, what's affecting your life right now? And if there were more teachers who were able to sit down with their students and ask about that, or, you know, a different teacher, because maybe you don't feel comfortable talking about how you're having a problem with that teacher to that teacher, but if you just had someone to talk to more often and had the teachers all trying to relate to you and see what's going on in your life and understand you, it might be a lot more helpful.
So it does seem like families and parents does play a part in your school. And do you think that students who come from a healthy family function better in school than those who come from a broken home, like divorced or single parents, stuff like that? Like, I mean, what is a healthy family?
Well,
you know, it's hard to say. Obviously, if you have a traumatic background, it's going to have some impact on everything. You can't really focus on school if you've got too much going on outside of school.
And having people to talk to about that, I mean, which is the idea of the homeroom, or even, like, the counselors, like, feeling that counseling is okay and talking to someone about it, would just be so helpful. And I mean, healthy families, though, I mean, I come from a family where, I mean, my mom's been married pretty much my whole life, but I've kind of always felt like she's been a single mother, and I don't feel like that's affected me. Like, I don't feel like, you know, like I missed out on a lot of things in high school because she was so dedicated to us, to me and my siblings. And so, yeah, sometimes it was a pain in the butt for her to drive us down the hill to go to, like, that other extracurricular activity I was doing to try to get into that college I wanted to go to. But she did it. And, I mean, I don't know what it's like for people who have only one parent.
So how much does the school get involved, though? Politically, they can only get involved so much, can't they? I mean, doesn't it seem like somebody starts making a fuss if they pry into students' lives?
Well, I think it just shows interest, and it shows that the teacher's really interested in their students, and I think that's really, really important. I think when a teacher can say, you know, well, you know, is something going on, then it shows that they care, and it makes me more comfortable to come to them, that it's a safe place to talk to them about something. And for me, I know that Willits High School has a very, very good counseling program and school counselors, stuff like that, and I've really taken advantage of that. And so I've never really had a problem with my home life and getting my schoolwork done.
Now, what about, being in college now, I have classes that are like an hour and a half long, or they're like, you know, maybe I only have it one day a week, so it's 4 hours long. And I know it seems like a really, like, huge thing, but how do you feel like class length affects you too? And, like, I mean, we've been saying, like, it's so structured and I have to take this for that and everything else, but if you had, like, one class that you took one day a week and then you had two classes that you took a couple days a week, how do you think that would affect you? And
That seems like it'd be great. The structure kills me. Going, you know, running around at the bell's behest, it's like, it's just too much. I would have made a great independent study student were I not such a, you know, diehard procrastinator. So there needs to be some middle ground for people like me.
Yeah, we, Willits High School used to be on a block schedule, and that's where we would have each class an hour and a half long. And I know that some teachers didn't take advantage of all that time, that a lot of time did go to doing our homework or talking to our friends, and so I don't think teachers really took advantage of that. But then again, when, you know, college comes up, it's, you know, hour and a half long for lectures and things like that, and the teachers really, really, really take advantage of that. So I think it's up to the teachers, too.
A thing I've really experienced, I think, is with any professor that I've had in college, it seems like they're really doing what they love. Like, I had a professor the very first day of class jumped up on the table to show us gravity by jumping off of it and showing us that, yes, he fell to the ground, even though maybe he was trying not to. And just to be, like, funny and to just laugh about it and to, like, feel like they have all the time in the world, but they only have 4 hours one day a week. And you don't feel rushed and you don't feel like you're not learning anything because you are, because you're so involved with that teacher. And I mean, I have another teacher who says he gets such a rush of adrenaline that when he's done with the lecture, he gets in his car and he's shaking because he's been so excited about his subject. And so if we could just have that kind of enthusiasm in high school, I would be blown away. Like, it would have made my high school experience, like, even more enjoyable.
All right, we're going to open the phone lines now. Anyone is welcome to call, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth in the listening audience. Do you think high school is set up in an efficient and effective way? Whether you are a student or a graduate, what do you see as the strengths and weaknesses of our high schools? What could be done to improve our educational system? The phone number is 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio, or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991.
Someone asked me a little bit ago, what's something I wish I would have done differently when I was in high school? And when I was first asked it, I kind of sat there for a second and thought about it. And I guess one thing that I really wish I would have done was not taking it so seriously. I just think high school gets so over-dramatized, whether it's a relationship with someone else or something that happened at school or that test that you took that you didn't do good on and you felt like you studied so hard. I just feel like life goes on and that there's so much more that you're offered later on in life. I mean, we're talking about, like, what classes can you have in high school that you don't have now? I mean, just to be able to get out of high school and finally go experience those new things, take a yoga class if you're bored, or go horseback riding or something, or learn to sing, just to have those new things. And if I wasn't so involved with the academic work and not so stressed out about going to college, I probably would have had a lot more fun.
I think that's really important that you say that, because I find myself in this hole where my social life is kind of depleted and I'm just thinking of, like, oh, my tournaments, or, oh, I have this big test, you know, and I guess that's really important. And from all the older students I've talked to, like, I've heard that's a large part that they're thinking of after they graduate. So, like, I mean, that totally plays a part in your social life and atmosphere at the high school. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it's something that's really incredibly important, but it's not clear enough. Adults have lives outside of their jobs. Kids need to be able to have lives outside of school. And I think a lot of people base their entire life around school when they're in school. Mm-hmm. So, and that gets to be a problem, especially when they graduate, because they don't know what to do.
I don't know. Like, I'm a very involved student. And I do things like peer counseling and sports and peer counseling play that took up a lot of time. And that's what I wanted to do. I was aware of the consequences that I was having, like not being able to do things on the weekends. And I had a month where I didn't have a weekend to myself. And it was really hard, but it was something that I was willing to do because it would better me as a person. And I was having fun doing it. So, I don't know.
Well, hey, if you're willing to do it, you know, if that's what you want, good for you.
Did you ever think of, like, not going to high school for the rest of the time? Or, I mean, like, now that I'm out of it, part of me was like, why did I do this for 4 years? Why didn't I just get my GED and go to college? And, I mean, I was like, oh, all the friends I made and who I don't talk to anymore now that I'm in college. So, I mean, like you said, Mike, you went to Germany and they like don't emphasize like finishing high school as much, like trade school and.
No, it's like I'm not totally clear on this, but my interpretation is that after about 10th grade, you can go on to a sort of a trade school or an apprenticeship. Like a friend of mine who's a foreign exchange student from Germany, he's in 10th grade here, and after this year, he's going to go apprentice for a big company, and that's great. He doesn't need to go to school for actually in Germany, it's like four or five more years. He doesn't need that. If he already knows what he's going to do, then you know he should go do it.
I think that comes into play here. Like, I remember in eighth grade, we were handed these career pamphlets, and there's these huge packets. Like, we were expected to know what we wanted to do, how many years we wanted to attend college, how we were going to achieve that, and, like, how serious we were about it. And I was just so shocked. But, hearing about Germany and how as if they might, like, already be prepared right after high school to go work or be an intern or something, I think if, like, I feel this large pressure to know what you're going to do right out of high school and have this solid ground of what you want to do for, like, the next 5 years after or so, you know. And I think the only way to really achieve that is to create a more comfortable place where students are given the opportunity to actually figure out what they want to do rather than knowing, you know, and, like, achieve those goals and skills that are necessary for that.
Do you feel like you'd be supported if you decided to not finish high school and to get your GED? And, I mean, how do you guys feel like being in high school? Like, do you feel like a lot of teachers would be like, yeah, I know you want to be that heavy equipment operator. Go get them, kid.
Well, like Mr. Osmond said, I don't think the high school really says, oh, yeah, you want to be a big, you know, heavy equipment operator. Go for it. You know, that's really awesome. I think that's kind of looked down upon. And it's things like becoming a doctor and a lawyer. Those are more important to people like that. Because I think it follows the money. And people stress that you need to get a good job or a high-paying job.
Well, definitely. That comes to play in society, too, though. Like, the higher-paying jobs and the American dream lived lives are recognized and, like, looked up to. Whereas the construction workers and the gardeners and so on are looked down upon when they're the builders of this nation that keeps it going steadily so the high-paying jobs can keep going.
And that's what they want to do. They want to be gardeners. They want to be these operators. And that should be acceptable.
That's success. If you're doing what you want to do, that's success. You succeeded in life. And once again, you know, not that we're not getting any calls or anything, but the number here is 456-9991.
So please call.
Please.
But yeah, what kind of a bridge is your high school building to help ease the transition from high school to the workplace or to college? That's kind of a complex question.
What kind of bridge are they building?
I think a structured bridge. I think it's pretty structured.
That's good. I wouldn't want to walk over a bridge just like cellophane.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's they're giving us all the information that we need to know to go into the world, and not everyone is going to college, not everyone is doing that. So it's just giving us this information that they're wanting to provide us, and a lot of the information is what the government wants to provide us with, too. So,
or the thing that they only feel is acceptable to provide you with. You know, they don't want you to necessarily go off on that new age thing and try out something really different or discover something new.
You damn hippies. Bunch of long hairs.
And we were talking before about, like, plans, too, and stuff like that. And, I mean, Anya was saying, like, you know, they feel like you have to have, like, you know, when you're in eighth grade, I have to know what I'm going to do for the next 5 years. And then when you graduate, you have to make up your 10-year plan, and it has to be in essay form. And you have to know what you want to do for the next 10 years. Do you know how hard that is to just sit down and be like, all right now, I'm going to figure out my whole life. And I'm going to write down this little essay, and that's going to be what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what I'm doing next week, so how can I think about 10 years from now?
Yeah, that is bizarre. When I was in 8th grade, they had me try and figure out what kind of a job I wanted, but they're not having me do it now, and they won't have me do it when I'm a senior.
Exactly.
What's up with that? But looks like we've got a caller. So, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, this is that long-haired hippie.
All right.
Since no one else called.
Good for you, man. What's with all these apathetic listeners?
Well, the thing is that we have been duped, you know. We've been duped into thinking that the only path is the workplace or college. And we forget that we're alive. That's it. You folks have said it really well many different ways, that you have to pursue your life, whatever that is at your heart. And that's really the most important thing. And I'll just go on because I could blather here. But
go for it, man. Nobody else is calling.
Okay, because the most distressing thing about the schools these days to me is that music is the first thing. Well, I guess it's not the first thing, but music and art are like on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the vocational arts too, that's included, when in fact those should be the last thing cut, because just from experience I know that music in particular develops such a capacity to focus on stuff, like if you're reading notes or reading music or focusing on your fingers.
Or relating to people. Or
yeah, that's what makes you a person, is right. Having those skills. A robot can do math.
Exactly. Exactly. Or language skills you can put into song lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just developing as a young kid, as a five-year-old, those pathways, the hand, eye, ear coordination, that eye brain coordination, it's all in music, it's all in art, it's all in arts and crafts. And I don't understand the cutting of that right off the bat, and keeping memorization of historical dates. And
yeah, no kidding,
because we're in corporate driven capitalist America.
Yeah, hey, you want to learn your obedience and how to fit right in, don't you?
Well, thank you very much for calling. Okay. You brought up some great points.
Hey, good show.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking, I know several, well, I don't know, a friend of mine went to Emmendahl for the summer and met, like, people who, like, maybe graduated from college and have, like, all this, like, knowledge, but then they went off and traveled, and they've just been going from, like, job to job, and they get paid, and then they maybe use that money to, like, fly somewhere else to have another new experience, and to, like, learn from one of those people, like, their life experiences, instead of, like, oh, after college, you know, I learned how to own a big corporation, you know? I mean, I would much rather hear about someone who learned about a new culture and new exciting things. And
yeah. I think people really, like, students especially, need to be exposed to the fact that things are subject to change in a matter of weeks or days or anything. Like, my father, for instance, he went to school for such a long time, and he almost got his PhD 2 months, like, before he could have received it. He came to California and decided he wanted to turn his life around and do something completely different. And he, like, to this day, he still doesn't regret it. So that just comes to show that success is measured in so many different ways.
Yeah, and then there is Peter Carney did a show here at the Art Center, and it was on homeless people that he had taken pictures of and their stories. And there was a man who had a PhD, had, like, his whole life and everything, and just decided he wanted to be homeless. He just wanted to, like, have that experience and just give up all these, like, tangible, like, I'm trying to think of the word, can't think of it, superficial things, and just live your life for day to day, see what happens, see what new people you meet, see what experiences you have. And I mean, I would be so scared to ever think of doing something like that, but I mean, it would be an amazing experience.
I think he left his family too.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Wasn't he married too? But not that I'm encouraging anybody out there to ditch anyone that you love, but yeah.
Those sort of things aren't as superficial, so.
Was he on any kind of religious trip, or was it just for the, you know, pure humanity of it?
I don't think so. I don't remember reading that it was any, like, driven thing besides experience life.
I don't know. That's cool.
Do you really feel like you're able to experience life in high school?
No. I feel like high school is a bizarre paradigm byproduct of the, you know, American way of life, but I don't think it really is American life. So we got a caller. Caller, you're on the air.
This is Claudia. But let me turn off my radio. Hang on. Yeah, I just wanted to join in on the discussion of what's happened. Oh, my gosh, I had another radio on. Let me get that one, too.
Thanks, Claudia.
Again, the number is 456-9991.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I wanted to get on to the discussion of going straight off to college as opposed to, you know, taking a little time to figure out what you want to do. And I think actually the time right after high school would be ideal if you could possibly swing it to just do your traveling and do your thinking and decide who you are and what you want. Because what happens, at least what happened to me, is that following that you begin to start settling down and having a family. And then you don't want to do what Peter Carney did and leave the family in order to have your adventure. It would be very nice to have the adventure first and then begin to, you know, go to school if that's your path, to say, okay, well, now I've experienced all of this. This is what I want to do. This is what it's going to take me to get there and go for it. And then, you know, if you're going to have a family, have it subsequent to that. Because I did the opposite, and I tried to do a bunch of things and ended up with a little child that I was single parenting and going back to school in my 40s to finally do the thing that I discovered I wanted to do, which was write for newspapers, which is what I do right now. And that was a really rough deal. We had a very rough time, and I kicked myself a lot saying, well, why didn't I get this together sooner? But I made the mistake of going to college first and then dropping out and wandering around and going back, and it's a very long detour.
Yeah.
And so hopefully people will, you know, be able to plan a little bit better. I mean, if you're going to, you know, plan an adventure, there's nothing wrong with planning an adventure. Plan to take 2 years to travel.
You can only afford to be a capricious youth once.
That's it, exactly. And it's better to do it when you're, you know, 20 than when you're 40.
Right. And thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Yeah.
Great show, then.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
One of the things my mom actually did is she supported me all through high school to be, like, you know, gung-ho academic. And then, like, when I was like, oh, I think I might go to Europe and maybe not go next semester to school, she was like, great, you know, live life. You're only young once. And I was like, oh, my God, thank you. To just have that support in your life from someone telling you that it's okay to not follow what everybody else is doing and to not, you know, just because you don't have enough money, it doesn't mean you have to be in debt to go to a four-year college. You can go to a JC, and that's all right. Or you can go travel and make some money and then go back to school and have new experiences. And I just think it makes you a better person. And real fast, Peter Carney didn't leave his family. It was someone he interviewed, just so that's cleared up. Sorry about that, Peter. Thank you.
But, yeah, I definitely think college is really important. But it's not for everyone. I mean, some people really know what they want to do right out of high school and even before they get to high school. And that should be encouraged as well. So.
Yeah.
So that's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts tonight have been me, Mike, and
Aaron,
and Anna,
and Scott.
Thanks to our callers, the few of them. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so call-ins are what makes this show happen. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willits studio. Youth Speaks Out would like to thank Laytonville's Healthy Start and the Mendocino Department of Social Services for providing funding until June 2003. Special thanks to Michelle Schott, Nikki Walden, and Michelle Franklin of the Laytonville Healthy Start program for making this grant possible. Healthy Start is a local group of people whose mission is to improve community health in the broadest sense, beginning with the needs of individuals and on to advocacy for policy and system change. Healthy Start is responsive to what the community needs and models programs around that. They implement a variety of services for students and families through an interagency team that meets weekly and tailors services to their needs. They are responsible for linking community members with needed services and opportunities within and beyond the community. People come into Healthy Start with a question or a problem, and no matter what it is, even if they can't help them, they can usually aim them in the right direction. Healthy Start sponsors an annual summer fair. If you would like more information about Laytonville's Healthy Start program and are in the Laytonville or Leggett area, please contact them at 984-8089. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who expressed them. We are pleased to announce that this program has its own website. We're at www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. That's www.youthspeaksout.net. We really encourage listeners to give us feedback on our shows. You can do it through email at the website or by writing us at Youth Speaks Out, P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Our next show will be on the last Sunday of April. That's May. That's May 25th at 6 p.m. Thanks for listening and good night.